It's here and now. About 20 years ago, the great jazz impresario Freddie Taylor and I wondered, where's Jimmy Webb? The man Rolling Stone called arguably the most successful mainstream songwriter alive seemed to have disappeared. Well, we found him, brought him to a small club Fred managed here in Boston. But he resisted at first. No one wants to hear my music anymore. He was wrong.
Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it. Cause it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have the recipe again.
Yes, there were mega hits like MacArthur Park, but also small gems like The Moon's a Harsh Mistress.
But careful if you try. Though she looks as warm as gold, the moon's a harsh mistress. Moon can be so cold.
Tomorrow there will be a tribute concert for Jimmy Webb in New York. He's donating all the proceeds to the Alzheimer's Foundation in honor of his dear friend Glenn Campbell. And he's got a new memoir out about his rise from son of Oklahoma farmers and Baptist preachers to hard-living superstar hanging with Sinatra, Joni Mitchell, you name it. But it was fueled by affairs and drugs. He crashed a glider. It didn't kill him, but an overdose almost did. His book is The Cake in the Rain, and Jimmy Webb joins us from the NPR studios in New York. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you again, particularly.
How would you describe this guy in the book?
You know, it starts out almost as a pastoral. I was truly a laborer, a farm laborer. And when my father got behind the pulpit and began preaching, I brought my work ethic to the First Baptist Church. And by the time I was 12 years old, I was the church pianist. Mm-hmm. That was my mother's, she thought that was the apex of show business. I think as you read along, you realize that, hey, you know, this is getting to be something that this guy is not able to handle.
Right. Because who could?
You know?
How old were you when you wrote Up, Up, and Away, By the Time I Get to Phoenix, Paper Cup, MacArthur Park? How old?
That would be 18, 19, and 20.
Yeah. You were appearing on the late night shows like Johnny Carson, and you had a kind of a meltdown in the middle of trying to do, I think it was MacArthur Park.
It broke down completely. I just looked around at the band and said, 1, 2, 3, 4.
It started him again.
I mean, I felt like killing myself.
You, I think, were straddling two worlds. Frank Sinatra loved you, but there was this rock and roll thing happening that was rejecting that world. Maybe you were, you know, going through some of the drugs and stuff so that you could be accepted in that other new world.
Well, I think that there's, you know, there's little doubt about it because I mentioned in the book that I read somewhere something about me and drugs and thought to myself, now we're getting somewhere. You know, I know that's a very bad joke, but I actually was trying very hard to be in that club. It was a very exclusive club. Linda Ronstadt would tell me years later, she would say, who did we think we were setting ourselves up in a kind of a hierarchy and keeping some people out? And John Denver and Donny Osmond. They weren't in. So you really had to establish one's credentials as a lefty, as a liberal, which I was anyway. But you know, Gil Scott Heron, when he wrote that poem about the revolution will not be televised, he sort of went out of his way to say that the song of the revolution would not be written by Jimmy Webb, and it was those kinds of slights, if you will, or that I felt were uncalled for because they were judging me because Glenn Campbell cut my tunes.
Yeah. And what the joke now, of course, is that, you know, Glenn Campbell revered, the music revered.
I call it our rehabilitation. That's what I call it.
I mean, when you were putting this together, are you thinking, how did I survive this?
Well, you know, I very nearly didn't. You know, there was part of me that was trying to stay alive. There was another part of me that said, well, if the Beatles are doing it and if they want you to do it, then you should be doing it.
Yeah.
I want to be a part. I want to be in this, you know. But I think that I managed to chart some territory for myself as an artist.
I think you did okay as an artist. I think you did okay.
Well, now I haven't sold any records, Robin. So
well, that not many are, you know. Now
I can remember hearing Frank Sinatra, Mr. Sinatra, sing one of my songs on the radio.
This time we almost made the pieces fit, didn't we?
This time. And I'm driving in my Mercedes 405 SEL. And just for a minute, it hit me. I'm a part of this moment, and I don't know how this happened. And it would be almost like a moment of absolute terror. confusion. When you look at some of the contemporary artists and the way they've left us in very tragic ways, and you go, how could that happen? So much promise and so much. And it's because they are overtaken by events.
And not the music.
No, yeah. No.
You write about, you know, a childhood sweetheart who becomes your girlfriend, Susie Horton. I did not know that a lot of the songs that you wrote were for her, but it bothered her because, as you write, it was a psychological weapon. You'd write, by the time I get to Phoenix, Wichita Lineman, MacArthur Park.
I don't think that you can beat a hit song when it comes to a psychological weapon. They were heartbroken laments. She was everything I'd ever dreamed of, and she got married to a school teacher.
Yeah, but you went out with some married woman, so you put it even there.
Oh, those married women, that's going to haunt me.
But I tell you, you could not go anywhere. You couldn't go. She couldn't have gone anywhere without hearing them, all three.
Yes,
all
it was. I actually did that to more than one person.
talk about Glenn Campbell.
I am a lineman for the county, and I drive the main road, searching in the sun for another overload.
I love the anecdote about when you're making Wichita Lineman with him. There was a Gulbranson of, what's that?
Yeah, an organ manufacturer. In those days, we didn't have synthesizers, but these organs came with very elaborate presets, bells, whistles. Now, I was just sitting there saying, hey, look at this, you know, and I punched a button, and then it sort of sounded like a satellite. And he said, what's that? What's that? And I said, oh, it's just me. I'm just playing two notes.
Yeah. Dee-dee-dee-dee.
He said, we got to put that on the record. And I said, I don't know how we're going to do that because this organ weighs 4,000 pounds. You know? And he called SIR, you know, and he says, hey, Shorty, get the truck over here.
Songwriters have to have the vessels to carry the songs. Just reflect for a second on the fact that there was Glenn Campbell.
Well, when I was 14 years old, I got down on my knees beside the bed because I'd heard a Glenn Campbell record called Turn Around, Look at Me.
There is someone walking behind you. Turn around, look at me.
And I believe it was perhaps 4.5 or 5 years later that I was driving down the Santa Ana Freeway and heard Glenn Campbell singing By the Time I Get to Phoenix.
By the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be rising.
It was a magical meshing of talents. I had been writing Glenn Campbell songs in my mind. I was ready for Glenn Campbell.
You know, you mentioned that in the book, you mentioned it as well, you know, politically on different ends of a spectrum. He was not the guy were hanging out with. You're hanging out with Harry Nilsson. And, oh, look, there's John Lennon on that Lost Weekend, which we're not going to go into that. But you're not hanging out with Glenn Campbell. But how would you describe, was it a friendship? How would you describe it?
Well, the first thing he ever said to me was, when are you going to get a haircut? And yet, I found out very quickly that there was hardly anyone who could stand on the same level as he could stand as a guitarist. And could stand behind me, watch my hands moving on the piano, and just play along on the guitar, which is like a virtual impossibility. Mm. And partially because of the tension, I think, between us, out of that came, I think, some of the nicest records of that period.
Galveston, oh Galveston, I still hear your sea winds blowing.
The main reason I'm doing the concert, because he really taught me a lesson in bravery. He taught me a lesson in what it really means to be a man when he contracted that disease and the way he dealt with that.
Okay, now.
And I've grown up a lot since I met Glenn.
Jimmy Webb, his new memoir is The Cake and the Rain. We'll have an excerpt at herenow.org. Jimmy, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and it's a pleasure to be with you again. That's an extra bonus. Maybe again sometime. Yeah.
Oh, no, we're not done. Right, right. Bye-bye.
Okay.
And
all
best
right,
of bye-bye. Luck. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right, bye.
Linda Ronstadt with Jimmy's Adios. Amy Grant will sing it at the concert tomorrow at Carnegie Hall. All proceeds going to the Alzheimer's causes. For more, go to herenow.org.
Adios.